The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, let's talk more about 2017 now here on LBC London News in a little more detail, specifically with regards to what's happened across the pond. Delighted to say I'm now joined by our US correspondent, Simon Marks. Happy Christmas and a Happy New Year to you, Simon.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Chris. I must tell you, I'm ending the year in a state of euphoria.
Why?
I've just discovered, after 24 years, next year will be 25 years of living in the United States, I've just found that my local supermarket has started selling kippers. I've just had kippers for breakfast for the first time, other than on those occasions when I've been in the UK, for the first time in a quarter of a century.
It's not a staple part of the American diet, is it?
No. And in fact, these are imported from Canada. So as I've decided, I've just broken the news to the family that as soon as I get off the air with you, I'm going back to the supermarket and I'm buying the entire stock.
Wow. Well, it's a good
thing to discover. If only they could now get some edible Chinese food, I could stay here.
Well, let's talk more about what 2017 has been like across the pond for you, Simon. Really, it was an extraordinary year. I felt like the news cycle was running at such a high speed for most of 2017. We were waking up each day trying to remember what shocked us the day before.
Yes, absolutely. I tell you, and this really was brought home to me, Chris. As some of you will know, I did a Christmas special for LBC looking back at Trump's first year. As I was digging through all the audio that I used in that two-hour program, and if listeners missed it and want to hear it, it's online. You can find it on my podcast. Just go to my Twitter account and there's a link to it. But as I went through all that audio and started assembling it, it was really sort of brought home to me that this was a crazy year in the United States, just in terms of the velocity of political developments that began with President Trump's inauguration back in January, that astonishing speech where he talks about American carnage as he's flanked by the political elites in the country and basically blames them for reducing the state of the country to rubble and insisting that, as he put it, this American carnage stops here and stops now. And that really uncorked the bottle for just a dizzying array of developments that you and I know very well because we've been on the air so much during the course of the year and often having to reflect these crazy kind of twists and turns. A real roller coaster ride here. And it's educational, isn't it, to think that a year ago we were looking forward to President Trump in the White House and asking ourselves, you know, some fairly essential questions. Would he become more presidential? Would he find a way of filling the role? Would he continue to use social media? Would he use Twitter as president of the United States? Well, we all now know the answer to that. Just yesterday, President Trump again defended his Twitter use. He actually said on Twitter, "I don't particularly like using social media, but I do it in order to overcome the lies that are told by the fake news media." So we've seen that relentless attack over the course of the last 12 months on the news media, a relentless attack on other pillars of democracy here in the United States, including, of course, the courts. Remember when the courts overturned his first attempt at the travel ban? He talked about so-called judges and he described the courts acting in such a political way. We've watched as he's tried to come to terms with the fact that the American presidency is not an authoritarian institution. It is constrained by constitutional constitutional checks and balances that give weight and power to the Congress and to the courts, as well as to the presidency. And as I think we go into 2018, you know, whatever you think of Donald Trump's politics, whether you approve of the things that he's done here or whether you disapprove of them, I think it is inarguable that he's never going to be a president like the presidents, Republicans and Democrats, that preceded him. The man that we are witnessing now, the man who within the last couple of hours has lashed out at Democrats, saying that it's unbelievable that smart voters would think about backing the Democrats in next November's midterm elections, the man who fulminates on Twitter, the man who engages in diversion constantly when he wants to draw everybody's attention away from the Russia inquiries that continue to grind away, that's who he is. He's never going to be more, quote unquote, presidential than he is today, and he would argue that that's a strength.
And of course, it's been a year in which he's had to say goodbye to a lot of people that were surrounding him at the beginning of 2017. The doors to the Oval Office have been swinging backwards and forwards as he said goodbye to some quite notable people.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the velocity of events here. Let's talk about the velocity of that revolving door at the White House, which has never spun faster in the first year of any American presidency than it has been spinning over the last year. We all remember Sean Spicer, the president's first press secretary, the man who insisted that the inauguration crowd was at record levels, even though obviously it was not. Anthony Scaramucci, his director of communications. Michael Flynn, his first national security advisor, who only served in the role for about a month, and whose disgrace, because he is tarnished by the lies that he now has legally admitted. He's confessed that he told to the FBI about his contacts with the Russians during the 2016 presidential election. In many ways, Michael Flynn's departure was the first sign of real trouble at the White House. There have been a slew of others. It's been very difficult for the President of the United States to keep a director of communications. He's lost a couple of cabinet secretaries, one of them, Tom Price, to a scandal over the use of private aircraft. And I think that, you know, it's not just the fact that the doors keep spinning people out of the White House, including laughable figures like a woman here called Omarosa Maginault, who was a contestant on Donald Trump's TV show, The Apprentice, and had a role at the White House as some kind of social secretary. No one could ever quite understand what on earth she was doing there. She spun out a couple of weeks ago, but only after it was reported widely by news organizations here attempting to break into the family quarters of the White House in a bid to try and persuade Donald Trump not, after all, to fire her. So you've seen these quite extraordinary scenes, but what hasn't been seen so obviously is that as people have left the administration, the appointments of new people coming in, first of all, has been very difficult because it's not easy for Donald Trump to persuade people to serve in his government. And secondly, in no way has he made good on at least one campaign pledge that he made, and that is to drain the swamp, to bring an entirely new cast of characters reflective of the people rather than reflective of Goldman Sachs and corporate America and big money. And that is one campaign promise that he absolutely hasn't been able to fulfill. And, you know, supporters of Donald Trump, people like Stephen Bannon, people like Nigel Farage, I interviewed him for my special program, they say, well, look, I mean, that just illustrates the power of the state here and state structures to kind of derail even a well-meaning president. But, you know, it is one of several policy pledges that remain unfilled.
And what? How has Donald Trump reacted to events around the world? I mean, he's had a lot to deal with, both within his own country and also around the world as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's look forward in a way to 2018, because I suppose that, we all thought that 2018 may be the year of North Korea, and it may still be the year of North Korea. The threat by President Trump to rain fire and fury down on the Korean Peninsula, even at a time when his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, a man who I think is dangling by a thread at this point, was trying to pursue diplomatic negotiations to end the crisis in North Korea. That has taken American foreign policy to a new place. A place where regional allies of the United States have had to understand that this is a president who speaks in different cadences, who isn't interested in the diplomatic niceties. The man who, of course, when he pulled out of the Paris Climate Change Accord, said, I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not the citizens of Paris. So that plain speaking, you know, has a major impact on the world of diplomacy, and we'll see what impact it has as the North Korean crisis advances, presumably, through 2018, unless there's a dramatic change of heart on the part of Kim Jong-un. But suddenly now, I mean, we're also talking about Iran, because the events of the last 3 or 4 days in Iran are unexpected. They have resulted in the president taking to Twitter and saying, look, we're great friends of the Iranian people, and we're happy to see that they are wising up and understanding that it's time to kind of confront the people that have done their country so much harm. Critics of the president will say, well, hang on a second, if you're such great friends of the Iranian people, why are they on the list of people who are banned from entering the United States at the moment? Ordinary Iranians can't get on a plane in Tehran and fly to the United States as a result of the version of the travel ban that the courts so far have upheld. So I think big questions for him on that, and of course, huge questions as we head into 2018 about the future of the special relationship. Who would ever have imagined that less than a year after Theresa May bravely became the first foreign leader to go where no other foreign leader had gone before, namely across the threshold into Donald Trump's White House, who would have imagined that the relationship would be at such a low point after the fury in London over the president's retweeting of those Britain First racist videos that in some cases did not purport what they claimed, did not show what they purported to show. And also, of course, intelligence difficulties between the US and UK after US intelligence agencies leaked information about the attack on Manchester Arena and the Ariana Grande concert in the immediate aftermath of it. So, you know, the relationship between London and Washington, I've never seen it at such a low point. And we'll have to see what happens in 2018, whether it can be repaired.
Indeed, and will he get an invite to the wedding of the year?
Well, that is the big question. I mean, can repair be accomplished with the backdrop of the nuptials between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle? I think is a very open question. I mean, it would seem highly unlikely to me that Donald Trump will actually attend the wedding. I mean, the security issues alone with regard to that would be enormous. There's been talk of him coming to the UK, although they've not announced it, but there's been talk of him coming to London in late February for what is now described as a working visit. I mean, there's optical difficulties with that, because remember that Theresa May invited him to make a state visit to the UK. Well, if he's got time to make a working visit to London, how come they haven't turned that into a full state visit? I think, and you know, in many ways, that decision to invite him to make a state visit, you know, with hindsight, I think everybody would agree, was premature and has created this kind of backdrop of difficulty and uncertainty over what exactly happens when and if Donald Trump comes to the UK, as they now suggest that he may do, to open that new American embassy in London.
And with his own American people, where do his approval ratings stand at the moment as he looks forward to his second year in power?
Well, look, he's ending the year with historically low approval ratings, the lowest approval ratings of any first-year president in the modern era, somewhere in the low to mid-30s, depending on which poll you look at. But, you know, that's way lower than the second most unpopular first-year president, which I think I'm right in saying was Bill Clinton at 49%. So he's way lower than that. But his base is still solid. And And 2018 is going to be a year in which it's election year. We're heading into election year. Unbelievably, Chris, you and I will spend a good chunk of 2018 talking about the midterm elections. One third of the Senate, the entire House of Representatives up for grabs. And really, Donald Trump's future, his personal future, hinging on the outcome of those elections. Because if the Democrats succeed, and that's a big if, they have not shown vast amounts of leadership and ability over the last 12 months. But if the Democrats succeed in taking control of both the Senate and the House of Representatives, they will be in a position to do two things. First of all, stop President Trump from getting anything done from a legislative perspective. He simply won't be able to get anything more done. He's already got the tax bill passed. I mean, maybe he'll get the infrastructure bill through the House and the Senate. But after that, we'll be into the election campaign. And if the Democrats win, that'll be the end of that. It will also empower the Democrats to begin impeachment proceedings against him immediately. And if the Russia investigation continues to grind away during 2018, as it has ground away during 2017, Democrats will be salivating at the possibility of trying to impeach a president who they argue not only has damaged the country's national security as a result of the rather curious ties that definitely existed now, we can say that without question, between Trump campaign officials and the Russians during the 2016 election campaign, but of course a man who in other ways, they argue, has damaged the country by coarsening the discourse, giving a nod and a wink to white supremacists in places like Charlottesville in Virginia earlier in the year, turning back many environmental regulations and laws here. It's been a desperate year for environmentalists in the United States after Donald Trump appointed a climate change skeptic to head the Environmental Protection Agency here in Washington, D.C. So they're salivating at the possibility of taking him down, which is why even today, as we head towards the 1st of January 2018, Donald Trump is spending so much time on Twitter attacking the Democrats. You will see more and more and more of that as he tries to build his base and stir his base to action to cut the Democrats off.
And very briefly, Simon, you mentioned the Democrats there. Hillary Clinton, of course, the president that wasn't. What did 2017 hold for her, and what might it hold for 2018?
Well, 2017 for her, of course, held not what she expected. It held only the publication of a book called What Happened. Worth making the point that there's no question mark at the end of that title. It's her version of what happened, as opposed to her asking the question, what on earth happened? She is, I think, without question, still wondering whether she has any opportunity at any kind of political future. There are those here who think that she will give it another go in 2020. There are those here who think that she won't. What I think she will seek to do is campaign for Democrats all over the country in those midterm elections. But like Donald Trump will find with Republicans, it's going to be interesting to see whether Democrats want to be seen with her, whether they conclude that Hillary Clinton is helpful or harmful to their campaign. And I suspect that what you're going to see in 2018 is Barack Obama coming back, in the sense that, first of all, the Democrats will definitely want to get him out on the campaign trail, and Michelle Obama as well, but also Barack Obama coming back and saying, look, to the Clintons, this is actually my party now. This is my opportunity to determine the future direction of this political party. Your time is over. And we'll have to see how that plays out. I think it's going to be quite a complex dance that the Democrats have to go through. Don't forget the Bernie Sanders supporters. They are still an important element on the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. They think that one of the party's major mistakes was basically pursuing too centrist a path, and I suppose like Jeremy Corbyn supporters, they will argue that it's time for a battle for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party on this side of the Atlantic. Let's see where all that goes. But as we go into 2018, there is no one in Washington that can, with any confidence, tell you who the Democrats' standard bearer will be in the 2020 American presidential election. And that, by the way, is a slight problem for Donald Trump, because, as you know, he keeps going after Hillary Clinton on Twitter. But, you know, Hillary Clinton is yesterday's woman. By tomorrow, she won't even be last year's woman. She'll be the woman of 2 years ago. And I think that what Donald Trump thrives on is an opponent to attack. And Hillary Clinton's no longer that opponent, and we don't know who the next one's going to be.
And Simon, I might be putting you on the spot here, as I often do. any predictions for 2018?
Donald Trump will tweet a lot more and will, to be serious about it, will, I think, continue to flirt with extraordinary danger through his use of social media. Bill O'Reilly, the disgraced Fox News host, before he was a disgraced Fox News host, used to argue that Twitter would be Donald Trump's undoing. And I think Twitter is a perilous outlet for Donald Trump to be using, especially when he and his administration are under legal investigation. The other point to make is that there will be surprises, as there are every single year, but particularly I think with this president, the rest of the world is beginning to understand, you know, look at the way in which the Chinese handled him, for example, during his visit to China. Look at the way President Putin handles him. The rest of the world is beginning to understand how to play him, and I think people will continue to play him in a bid geopolitically to get what they want. And one of the questions will be, who's going to be steering American foreign and diplomatic policy going forwards? It's not going to be Rex Tillerson. And if it is Rex Tillerson, as it is today, he's so neutered and damaged that no one's going to take him seriously as Secretary of State. So, tremendous uncertainty ahead. And I suspect in 12 months' time, when we do this again, we'll be saying, remember all those things we said at the beginning of at the end of 2017 going into 2018? How did we not understand that this and this was going to happen? You know, I think there will be just tremendous unpredictability and uncertainty.
Yes, well, certainly. But look back in a year's time and check the tapes, Simon.
Exactly.
Thank you very much, Simon Marks, our US correspondent, live from the US for us from Washington, looking back on what was quite a year for Donald Trump, inaugurated in January. He will be celebrating 1 year as president towards the end of January. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date with all the twists and turns across the pond in America. You can also follow Simon, our US correspondent, at Simon Marks FSN on Twitter. He'll certainly bring you all the twists and turns from what is a changing political landscape in America. Do stay with us here on LBC London News for plenty more. It's just coming up to 3:46.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.